On today's episode of The Good Word, BJ Armstrong joins us to discuss the Jimmy Butler conundrum in Miami, the effect of the new CBA on NBA finances, Derrick Rose's relationship with Chicago, and how the game has evolved from BJ's era. All that and more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter, Yahoo Sports, and the host of this show. Before we get into the show, a couple of bits of business to get into. If you haven't already, don't forget to subscribe to The Good Word with Goodwill on YouTube. Leave us a rating or review wherever you consume this podcast, audio or visually. Let's get to the show. Today, we are joined by Pride of the West Side of Detroit. If you see him on YouTube, that is a black and blue Detroit versus everybody sweatshirt that he's got on. Unfortunately, that is the colors of the Detroit Lions. He is a three-time NBA champion. He is a former NBA executive. He is now an agent and a podcaster. My man, BJ Armstrong. What's going on, B?
I'm doing well. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And when you said, this is Vincent, I was like, who is Vincent? I was like, am I in the wrong place? I was like, who is Vincent? But hi, Vincent. I don't think I've ever called you that. But thank you for having me. So I was having an internal laugh as you were in your introduction. But no, we're so proud of you and what you've done and your career, and here we are still laughing, what, years and years later. And I know you've gone on Vinny, you know, yes, that's what we call it. There we go. But I'm still in the Honolulu Blue. 57 years, Vinny, I've been waiting for this day. I don't know how to act. We are 15-2.
Clearly.
And most of the Detroit fan base has gone on. They traded out on the Lions. My whole family, except myself, you and others, and we understand. But we're going to grandfather you all back in because Vinny, it's been a long time. It's happening. It's here. You're from Detroit, so you understand what's going on. But right now, Vinny, this is the greatest moment in my life. This is the greatest moment of my life. And I've had a lot of great moments.
Kids, you've had a lot of them.
Family, the city of Detroit, and all those things. But the Lions right now, Vinny, are 15-2. I've never seen this. My phone is going crazy. And then, just by coincidence, it wasn't by coincidence, it was divine intervention. Here I am with another Detroit native. So this is the greatest. 2025 is our year. Everyone from Detroit, this is our year. So thanks, Vinny, for having me. Vincent. That's Vincent.
You done? Just let me know when you're finished.
Yeah, I'm done now.
BJ.
I'm done. You know what? Hey, I just got to give it one time. What up, though? Okay, I'm done. That's it.
BJ, if you haven't realized, BJ is a Lions fan. I quit the Detroit Lions on July 27th, 1999. I got rid of toxic relationships. Okay. That day, you know what that day was, BJ? July 27th, 1999? You want to take a guess what that day was?
What was that?
When Barry Sanders said, I quit, I said, you know what? It's time for me to get out. And that was the day that I left that toxic relationship.
You know what? I understand. I was there throughout the whole time. I understand. This hasn't been easy now, but you know what, Vinny? This is the greatest thing. You know what? There's two words that come to mind, the why I stayed in. I must overcome obstacles, I must overcome adversity in order to have anything that resembles success. Mm. Vinny, I've overcome a lot of obstacles being a Lions fan, and I've overcome the greatest adversity, and here we are. And this is our year, Vinny. You can't tell us otherwise. This is our team. This is our year. And they resemble us, Vinny. You got to at least admit that. This team represents everything about the city of Detroit. And we love it.
I'm going to refrain from responding in the way that I really, really want to respond. Okay? Because when I'm covering an NBA game, BJ.
Yes.
and I'm hearing Jared Goff chants at Pistons games. That is some of the dumbest shit. I just want to get bleeped out. That's some of the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life. You're at a basketball game, and you got actually a basketball team with a pulse, and you're chanting Jared Goff's name? Hey. Nah, dog. I can't ride with that.
Hey, you know what? It's been 57 years. I've never seen this. So let me experience it, and then I'll get back to you. Right now, we're 15-2. I can't get distracted by anything else other than what's happening at Ford Field. Cool. What's going on in Little Caesars Arena, whatever it's called now? That's Little Caesars Arena. Right now at Ford Field, you can't tell me nothing right now. You can't tell me nothing.
Have
Vinny.
Your moment of joy. I'm not hating.
Vinny, I've waited literally my entire life to be here. So you know what? I'm here. I'm smiling. We're hungry. And you know what? Detroit versus everybody. And y'all know what that means. Y'all know what that means.
That is BJ Armstrong, ladies and gentlemen. BJ, of course, as we get to the business of the day, we get that Lions nonsense out the way.
Okay, all right.
So, B, I wanted to have you on because I feel like you're the perfect person. You're legit the perfect person to talk about three of the main topics I want to hit on today.
Okay, let's do it.
We're going to hit on Derrick Rose,
who
you've represented throughout his career and his relationship with Chicago. We're going to hit on the state of the NBA. Because everybody's got gripes, concerns, critiques, whatever you want to call it. But first, I want to hit on this Jimmy Butler situation in Miami. Okay?
Jump right in.
Let's get to it, right? So, the Miami Heat over the weekend or before the weekend, it had already been ugly. Jimmy Butler said, I can't find my joy. He basically issued a soft trade demand or request. The Miami Heat didn't want to pay him his extension this offseason, so it created this untenable situation. And then the Heat suspended him for 7 games, and then Jimmy and his agent and the Players Association said, no, that's not going to happen. BJ, my question to you as we sift through all this, when you look at Pat Riley and the Miami Heat and the way that that organization has been lauded through the years, Heat culture, everything else, did they not see this coming? Did they not see, if you're not going to give a player like Jimmy Butler his extension, that potentially it could get ugly and it has gotten ugly?
Well, I would love to say that they didn't see it. However, you know, Pat Riley has more experience than anyone in the NBA. You know, I always like to be very careful when I say you've seen everything. Well, you just keep living and you're going to see something new. Like my Lions, for instance, this is something new. Everything in this conversation will come back to the Lions, by the way. Everything. So now, here's the situation with Jimmy Butler. No one, you can argue how good you may think Jimmy Butler is. Jimmy Butler is an impactful player. That's why he was traded or however he got down there to Miami. Because Pat Riley, if there's one thing he can identify great talent. And not only can he identify great talent, he has shown the ability in this era to develop great talent. You can see the development of young players here. And he has done this with players that he hasn't even drafted. Undraftable players, they get to the NBA Finals. Okay. So Heat culture is a real thing because of the level of excellence that Pat Riley's leadership has provided Eric Spoelstra, Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler, so forth and so on. Now we're at a stage for Jimmy Butler. I think he's roughly around 35 or so. Please check.
35, yep.
Okay, he's right around 35. He has 1 year left on his deal, if I read this correctly, for over $50 million.
Yes,
52. With the player option.
Yep.
Okay. Now, Vinny, you asked a great question, as you always do. That is the basketball business. But also, there's a flip side to this. There's the business of basketball. What is Jimmy Butler's value moving forward past next year? And the best ability is availability. That is the million-dollar question. So Jimmy Butler made the first move based on what I read when he said, whoever trades for me, you can trade for me, but I'm going to determine where I want to go, which puts those teams who may consider trading for Jimmy Butler at a disadvantage because they're going to give up players because they have to meet the salaries when they do trade for him.
Right.
So now you have the second apron teams. You have all these teams that will have to put multiple players to get a player of his value because you're not going to get an equal value for him at this stage, at this point. So now it puts those teams at a disadvantage. This is the business of basketball that we have to always discuss. Pat Riley at some point and the Miami Heat have to make the decision. What is our timeline that we're working on with this roster as it currently is? No one's arguing when Jimmy Butler plays and he plays and he performs that he's impactful. No one's arguing that. Now what we're saying is, what is his current value at this stage of his career? And in talking to executives, like we all do, yourself included, that's a real question. Are they willing? How many organizations are willing to exceed over $50 million in the current state of the NBA? And how are you going to build a team with you need more than one guy? So these are legitimate questions. I don't think this is Pat Riley versus Jimmy Butler. This is just the climate and the culture and the business that we're in. And everyone has to make a business decision. Wherever Jimmy goes, those questions will have to be answered if you're going to have a competitive team. Because at some point, everyone's going to say, we have a max player. And with the max player comes the expectations of they have to win. Well, how are you going to win with the max player if you don't have the ability to build under the salary cap as it currently is and the rules of the salary cap? How are you going to build around this player when there's no money to spend? That's a legit question. Every executive has to face it. This is why every executive puts so much emphasis on the draft, because the draft is the best way in order for you to identify your player and retain that player, which gives you a benefit to go out and sign players that you're going to need to sign to retain them as they get better, provided they get better and grow in your system of play. So this is a legit question that every executive has to answer. But more importantly, here we are with the Miami Heat who have to answer it sooner than most teams. And here we are, and I don't have the answers, but what I do know is that wherever he goes, that's a big number to try to build a team around.
I don't think that Jimmy, and I can't speak for Jimmy or his agent, but I don't, you know, sometimes people look at that number, that 50 million number, and you're saying, oh, he's going to want his starting salary to be that for the next X amount of years. And be, you know, like I know.
Right.
That total number is the number that a lot of people should be paying attention to. Not necessarily like the annual.
Sure.
How much you're making per year, especially as you get towards the end of your career where you're trying to, you're trying to stretch it out as long as possible.
Right.
For me, B, and let me get to a little bit of the news, some of the things that I've heard. While we're going through this, you know, suspension, not suspension, wages being taken, Jimmy's not going to miss a dime. Let's put it like that. That's not going to be allowed, so to speak. He's going to set a bad precedent. But I think I've heard Memphis is very interested. I don't know if Miami's interested in making a deal with Memphis. I think Chicago could be interested because they're trying to get off of Zach LaVine, which means you're trying to find a third team to take on a player like Zach LaVine. Houston, I think, could also be an interesting place because they have a bevy of young players. And even if they don't want to go all in with Jimmy Butler, you know, and sacrificing that, I still think you have enough that if you wanted to go in the Western Conference and say, hey, let's make a run at Oklahoma City, then we can do that. Those are just three teams off the top of my head that I've heard mentioned by a lot of people over the past, you know, few days as this thing is has gone on. B, from an agent perspective, when a relationship between player and franchise gets bad, how are you sort of telling the player about managing his emotions? Because it's going to be your job to sort of sift through and not be as emotional while the player is feeling emotional and the player is feeling disrespected and unappreciated and all that type of stuff. Like, take me into your mind as sort of being the conduit in that space.
Well, the one thing, Vinny, that will always trump everything that is being said and being talked about, narratives and all of the things, people's and their emotions. Performance is the X factor in this business. Jimmy is not the first player to be unhappy about a contract situation. And believe it or not, Vinny, you and I will be right back here on this podcast again talking about it tomorrow, next week, in the summertime. So players being unhappy with their current team, the team currently unhappy with the player, that's just the nature of the business, okay? You don't get into this business, okay, to be happy. You get into this business to become a professional. That's what it is, right? At some point, everyone's going to get traded. And if you don't get traded, hey, consider that, you know, lucky. They traded Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Every player has been traded. Okay. So now it gets down to, what is Jimmy trying to accomplish? What is the most important thing to Jimmy? Does he want years? You saw that with Paul George. Is it the number? Meaning, what kind of salary does he feel he's worth? And what does the team feel he's worth? Does the team have money? What's the timeline? You know, you mentioned Chicago. Okay, well, Chicago look like they've already made a decision to me on what they're doing. They don't look like they're into like a rebuild type situation. Okay. The Houston Rockets, well, you know, they got this kid, I hope I'm pronouncing his name.
Sengun, yeah.
Okay, you got Jalen Green. You get Fred VanVleet. You got this kid Thompson.
Yeah,
they got some business decisions to make here. Okay,
because yes,
this
do.
Kid that seems like long term, they got a chance. Because in my opinion, they are ahead of schedule right now. I didn't expect them to be in the top five in the Western Conference this quickly.
Absolutely.
Okay, and then you have Memphis, which is a small market team. I don't know how close they really want to get into that second apron.
Yeah.
Okay. Now,
don't forget the Phoenix Suns too. The Phoenix Suns
and all those things. But then I look at the Phoenix Suns, and then my initial reaction is, well, Bradley Beal has a no trade clause.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you going to trade? Devin Booker? You going to trade Kevin Durant?
No, Beal is the play. Because Beal is not going to apparently going to the bench.
Okay. But then all of a sudden, are we just assuming that Pat Riley is saying, wait, I got Tyler Hero here.
Right.
And then you just go to add Bradley Beal to this. So there is a lot of moving parts. There are a lot of moving parts. And you got to find the perfect scenario for all of the players involved. So this Jimmy Butler situation can only be enhanced by his performance on the court. Because the better he plays, the more options will be available to him. If there is any advice that I give all my players as an agent. If you want to get traded, just play well. Okay?
Yeah.
If you want to get traded, you go out there and do what Shea Alexander is doing right now. They'll figure out a way to get him. They'll figure that out. But if you're not available and you're not playing, and we're just talking about interviews and all those things, now all of a sudden, it's not as attractive to that team if you're not performing. So performance is what I encourage. If you want to help, if you want to have a partnership with the player, is to get them to understand how important it is to perform. Because everyone needs a player that can get out there and get it done. And when Jimmy Butler plays, when he plays the way we know Jimmy Butler, there's no argument what he does. The problem is, why is he getting on doing an interview after a game saying he has no joy? Like, I don't know. I don't know those answers. Those are answers I don't know. I'm not privy to that. But I would hope that he can come back when he does come back, perform at a high level, so teams can say, hey, you know what? Maybe it might not be right for him down there in Miami, but this might be right for us down here. And then I guarantee you, every team in this league can use his talent. That for sure. I can say that. But we need him to go out there and do it.
Look, B, this starts when Pat Riley comes out and says, you know, if Jimmy Butler isn't playing, then he's got to shut the hell up type of thing. You know, when during Pat's postseason press conference last year. And you're right. Jimmy Butler hasn't always been available. Jimmy Butler can be a headache. Jimmy Butler, I've said it for years, he's the ultimate mirror. Whatever you got going on inside your building, it's going to reflect on him because he's going to expose it. Good, bad, or indifferent. That's just what it is. In the last 2 years in the playoffs, when he's played, we're talking about the NBA Finals, carried that team to the finals. And then the year before that, 2022, you could pretty much say that they were a three-pointer from Jimmy Butler away from going to the finals and beating Boston then. 27-7. That's performance. Now you're saying he's 35 years old. You're looking at the miles on his body. You're saying, can we commit to you beyond next season when maybe you're going to be 37, 38? If the injuries are racking up now, how can we trust you to perform later when I get it? It makes all the sense in the world. BJ, I'm a person that says scared money don't make money. If I am the Golden State Warriors, I'm saying, what am I doing waiting? Granted, you've got
who you going to give up, though? Who are you going to give up to get them?
Well, Golden State would have the package probably would have to revolve around Jonathan Kuminga and Andrew Wiggins just to start. Wiggins because of the salary, Kuminga because of the upside. Like it would have to figure out something along those lines, and then they have some salary, you know, some filler guys, some Kyle Anderson.
So who did you say? You said Kuminga and who else? Who else?
And Wiggins.
And Wiggins. Okay.
Now, I'm saying if I am the Golden State Warriors, who's looking at Stephen Curry and saying, okay, Steph, we're watching, decline isn't the word, BJ, but you're seeing Steph not be able to hit the high notes every single night. And Draymond Green can't be his second best player because Draymond Green isn't an offensive sort of threat in that way. That's a move that I'd make. But it doesn't look like maybe Steve Kerr isn't keen on coaching a Jimmy Butler because he has to deal with a Draymond Green, you know, already in the locker room and everything else. Like, who knows? But BJ, I do want to ask you this before we go on to talk about the Bulls. Two things that come for me this week in stories that I've been writing about and stuff that I've been covering. I've written about the Minnesota Timberwolves and their issues. They were in Detroit on Saturday night, and I got to see them up close. Do we truly understand, did the players truly understand, did the teams truly understand, BJ, how punitive this second apron was going to be in the CBA? Because I feel like this Jimmy Butler thing is about staying out of the second apron of the luxury tax. We don't want to pay you because it will restrict us. The Minnesota Timberwolves are a 500 team after getting close to the NBA Finals last year because they had to trade Karl Anthony Towns for Julius Randle because of luxury tax penalties. Do you think the principal people really understood this, or you think they knew it and just didn't care?
Again, you know, like I just want to say I was not part of those negotiations, but I will say this. You know, the NBA, when I say the NBA and the owners, I think they clearly understood this, right? I think they clearly understood it. Why? Because what is in the best interest for the NBA and the business of the NBA is to draft players and be able to retain those players in the current market. And they want to reward the teams that draft well. Since we're talking about, here's for example, the Golden State Warriors have benefited more than any other franchise over the past decade because they've drafted well. They drafted Stephen Curry. They retained him. They drafted Klay Thompson. They retained him. I know he just left, but they retained him in his prime. They drafted Draymond Green. They retained him. when you draft well in this league, okay, you have a significant advantage because you have every way to retain that player. Okay, it rewards you.
Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City, okay, is another. Look, you can see, look at the Boston Celtics. So we know the formula. However, in order to get a deal, you got to give up something to get something. And I'm not here to criticize anyone. I'm just saying the deal was made, and now you can see the effects of the deal. The player movement is very limited now because of the rules that have been put in place. Now, whether that was an accident or deliberate, I don't know. But here it is. But what I do know is that it's very limited for the ability of the players to go out on the free market and be able to get a better deal than with your current team and your current roster because of the rules that are currently in place. That's a fact. No one can argue that. No one can debate it. So in saying all of that, Vinny, now we are in a system now where clearly roster construction and constructing a roster and looking at it from a financial standpoint of saying, well, if I can't get a deal here in Miami, I can just easily go to Golden State and get the same deal or better. No, those days are over. In order for Jimmy to go anyplace, it's highly unlikely if he does it any other way other than to get traded, how is he going to be able to keep moving north of where he's currently at? So then it comes into play of what salary, you know, what market or what area will he feel comfortable in? How many years? We just saw it play out in real time with Paul George. So now this is what it is. Now you have to put an emphasis if a player is, what's more important to you, making money or winning, right? Years, do you want 3 years or 4 years, 2 years or whatever the case may be. So now it puts you financially, the best option will be for you to stay with your current team because of the way the rules and the way the system is currently set up. That's just the way it is. And that was the deal that was made. And now we have to deal with it.
Nothing. You asked something very, you asked something rhetorically, BJ. Like maybe okay. 45 seconds ago, you said, I'm not sure if it was by accident or by design. From the NBA that I know, ain't a damn thing that happens by accident. Okay? Tell y'all all listening, don't be naive. Don't fall for the banana in the tailpipe. All these unintended consequences as far as specific situations, like the NBA right. wasn't plotting to get Karl Anthony Towns out of Minnesota or Jimmy Butler out of Miami, so to speak. But what they did want to do is redistribute talent. What they do want to do is suppress salaries by creating this pseudo hard salary cap system, by limiting ways that you can keep players, by limiting ways that you can go out and get players. You can't use exceptions. You can't group players together to go get another player. They want to do everything they can under the illusion right. of you keeping your flexibility. So by keeping your flexibility, that means you have to spend less so that you don't have, so that you can't spend more. That's all. BJ ain't gonna tell you that. I'm gonna tell you that. We ain't worried about that. But when we come back, we gonna talk about BJ's guy, Derrick Rose, going back to Chicago this weekend for a really, really cool special weekend with the Bulls. You're listening to The Good Word here on Yahoo Sports. Back here on The Good Word with BJ Armstrong. BJ, Derrick Rose went back to Chicago this past weekend. Right. He was honored by the organization. Really well done. Like the yes. Bulls bring back, you know, with the exception of a couple of notable players, they bring back their former players pretty well, right? Right. And they right. brought back a lot of Derrick Rose's teammates. Yep. They gave it was a nice ceremony before the game, during the game. They had stuff in the atrium. It was just really, really well done. And then they also announced Saturday morning that they're going to retire Derrick Rose's right. jersey next year, and it's only like four numbers up there. Mm. It's not that many. It should only be three because, you know, Scottie Pippen got his jewelry courtesy of Air Jordan Jewelers. But it's four jerseys up there. And I, that's your former teammate, BJ. You ain't got to say it. I'm saying it. You know, BJ, a smart person once told me
what he said.
Michael Jordan was so great, he went to the Hall of Fame as two players, himself and Scottie Pippen. I ain't going to tell you who said it, but somebody real smart told me that. You know what I mean? And I was that's insightful. So going back to Derek.
Yeah, okay.
Going back to Derek. Youngest MVP in NBA history.
Yes.
Inglewood's, like, he's Chicago bred and born and all of that. And Chicago has a rich grassroots basketball history. And Derrick Rose is the guy that was drafted number one and was the youngest MVP in 2011. And everything that happened after that, the injuries and the relationship that sort of fragmented. But to see it back now, to see Derrick at 35 years old, talking to a crowd, knowing Derrick Rose has been a quiet introvert and everything else throughout the course of his career.
Yes.
Just speak to the relationship being repaired and how important that is for him and just his own growth and how you've seen him speaking to 20,000 people when he didn't used to like standing in front of the microphone.
Yes, yes. Well, listen, first of all, you know, it was such a pleasure and an honor to be able to work with this young man and his family. I mean, the Rose family, you know, they're an extended part of our family here. And to see that word that you said, the growth in this young man from a shy, I mean, sometime until you got to know him, it could come off as painfully shy. He was so shy. To see him grab that microphone and talk in front of 20,000 millions of viewers and to be able to express himself, I mean, that's what life is all about. You grow. And to see him do that with his family and his wife and his children and former teammates and family members and all of the people, Vinny, it was just phenomenal to see. And you know, you grow, and this is the business part that you may not understand things, but in the end, he is from Chicago. One of the greatest things ever, Vinny, is we're in the business. You've covered sports for, well, I don't know how many years now, and you've
close
done an
20.
Incredible job. But Vinny, the storytelling of Derrick Rose's story, to me, it's just an incredible story that we can all identify. I mean,
yes.
You know, here's this young kid, comes out of Inglewood. You know, you and I grew up in Detroit. We know that story.
Yes, we do.
Kid makes it, gets drafted by his hometown team. That's all of our dream. Like, hey, I dreamed of playing for the Pistons. It didn't happen, but I dreamed about it. Well, it happens for him. Kid goes on in 3 years from getting drafted to the MVP. Well, that's a story. And then, out of nowhere, he has an injury and he falls down. Name someone who hasn't fell down or had some type of setback in life. He gets back up and continues his career and plays, what, 17, 18 years or something in the NBA.
Yeah.
And he gets a chance to get his number retired in his hometown. I mean, the storytelling of this is a movie. I mean, Vinny, this is like... this is a Hollywood script. So to see all of this and to see the growth in this young man, to see what he's gone through and to live it out in front of millions and millions of people and to get through it, by the way, is an accomplishment. And there's more to the story to come. So congratulations to him and his family, for him to be an example for his kids. And for the millions of people all around the world that have followed his career and to support him and what he's been able to do, just states volume. You can see the response of people can identify with his story. So if there's anything to learn is, you know, when I think of Derek and his career, the perseverance that this young man has had throughout his career, it's been nothing short of amazing. For him to be able to continue to get up time and time again to give you his best. That's what a champion is all about. And he is a champion. He's terrific. But behind the scenes, his family and the people that hear, you know, they were there for him every step of the way. You know, we tried to do the best we could for him in the representation part of it, but truly it was Derek and his family. He just had a will. And congratulations to him, the Bulls, what they were able to do to honor him, and knowing what this young man means to the city of Chicago says a lot. You know, I don't know if that was planned for them to retire his number, but certainly they got a lot of good points.
Yes, they did. That.
So congrats.
You don't know. When I covered the Bulls, and I thought I had a good like sense of how much a player means to a city. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until I was there.
Right.
And I was like, oh, he means something.
Yes.
Different. In a different way. And it's real condescending to say, oh, you don't understand. Right. You're like, I hate when people say that, because like you're trying to say that I am incapable of getting this on a level. But with Derek in Chicago, it is so like on the ground. It is so like meeting regular people who know him or know the family. Like, he is literally Chicago's son. Like, Isaiah Thomas is Chicago's son. Tim Hardaway is Chicago's son. Like, there are people who are Chicago's sons in a way that you can only really appreciate it from being on the ground, and not even a way that I can properly storytell. Right. You know what I mean, BJ? Yes, like, yes. I can admit that I don't have the lens in the way that those people have the lens. So, BJ, for him to win that MVP in 2011 at that age, like, I don't think we really appreciate, A, the player that he was, and B, what he was carrying at the time.
Yeah. Well, Vinny, listen, I would love to tell you that I had some secret formula. I would love to tell you that, you know, it was Tom Thibodeau. I think that was his first year coaching, right? Mm-hmm. Year coaching Derek at that time. I would love to tell you that people thought that Derrick Rose could even be an all-NBA player at that time, let alone the MVP, okay? But what I did know, Vinny, was that this kid, when the cameras were off, he was just as good as when the cameras were on. That's the one thing that I loved as an executive. I loved it as a player. I love it as an agent. I get a chance to see what's going on when the cameras are off. And when you can see what's going on with a player in the off season, it's easy to say who's going to be, you know, MVP or whatever. Now, and the reason I can say that is because, you know, Vinny, back in the day, every player tried to come back every year with something new to their game.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that as much now.
Mm-hmm.
The offseason used to be a time where you would add to your game. You weren't just working on one aspect of it. You would come back, you know, well, this year I'm going to actually have a mid-range shot, or I'm going to have whatever it is you needed to work for your team.
Right.
That summer, from year two to year three, he had figured out the spacing that was required to play in the game. And the reason he had such a leap was because that was the first summer where he actually realized, in my opinion, what his speed was really for. It was to get him in trouble, and it was to get him out. And he knew how to control his speed. If you watch him, he played at different speeds. Derek was as fast as anybody, especially with the ball in his hand. But he would just, all of a sudden, he'd be going real slow and boom. He would be going like, you know, quarter speed, boom. He would go fast and stop. And that is when he figured out he could manipulate the game. And once he figured all of that out, because he never played, he just played at different rhythms, at different flows, and he could attack. He could be like standing there, and all of a sudden, I can still picture that. Remember that move against the New York Knicks where he was just like on the wing, and he just crossed over, and bam! It's just like, oh! You know, it was just like, he knew how to utilize his speed. The hardest thing to teach someone who's fast is how to slow down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He mastered that. He mastered the art of stopping, starting, playing half speed, full speed, and he never gave you an opportunity to catch his rhythm. And that third year, everything went right. He understood how to manipulate a game from the lead guard position. He understood how to keep the game close when he needed to so he could win it at the end. He understood if he was up, how to stomp on somebody. He understood what I like to call, he knew how to take a team and take players to the deep end. He'd take you there. He'd say, okay, I can't beat you in the first quarter. I can't beat you in the second quarter. But I found an opportunity in the third where I'm going to take you in the deep end and take you under. He understood how to take a punch. He understood. It just came to him. I wish I could tell you I got the secret formula. We talk about it, but it's harder. He's the one that got to go out and do it.
Right. Well,
he did it. And mm-hmm. It happened for him so fast that he absorbed it. He did it. It was all him. He deserves all of the credit. And he just had one of those years. He just had where it all came from, but he was the reason why. And I was fortunate enough to watch him that entire summer. I wish that I would have had his practices from that summer, because that is what the kids need to see. Oh yeah, you saw the MVP. Yes, you did. You saw the results of it. But truly,
the work.
Getting up early in the morning, pushing through the workouts, doing it when there was no cameras around, being in the gym by yourself, living that life so that when the cameras were on, he was the same person. And that, you know, if there's one thing for the young people to learn is to say, what are you doing when no one's watching? And I just happened to be there and I saw it. And you know what is funny about that? You know who was there every step of the way with him was Russell Westbrook. I never imagined that I was watching two MVPs in the same gym.
That's crazy.
When I think about this, those two, I mean, it's no accident when you're watching Russell right now, because you know what he's done. So to be able to watch Derek and to watch Russell, knowing that Russell was right there. I mean, those two were like inseparable. And to know that both of them went on to become MVPs in this league, come in the league at the same time, to be that athletic. When I tell you it was a blessing to watch these two, it's a point guard's dream. I've lived a dream, and I just wish that I would have filmed it. I wish I could have share it with the rest of the world, because those two worked harder than anyone I've ever seen. And they were a different level of athlete at that position at that time.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, John Morant has come along and some other John guys Morant, have come along.
He's not as big as those two.
No. They're physically imposing and powerful.
I wish I would have had to say, I'm just going to film that summer to share with everyone so everyone can know, like, okay, this is the standard. Derrick Rose, if you want to know how to play and stop and start and all that, you should watch him. You should just watch him. Just watch the old Derrick Rose film. Ja Morant, by the way, stops and starts as well as I've seen since Derrick Rose.
Mm-hmm.
Russell plays at a different pace. Russell...
just go.
He just goes. Russell is, I couldn't get him to stop. So clearly, I mean, Russell, I joke with him now. I was like, when are you going to stop? Like, he just goes. But that's his pace.
Right, right.
But it's great. Derek is, what a career. What a great friend. And it's just great what he's been able to do. But you're right. What he is, the city of Chicago. That city means, the city has embraced him, and we all say this, but I haven't seen a player embrace the city like he embraces Chicago. He is Chicago through and through. Like, no matter where he's at in the world, he'll let you know, where are you from? I'm from Chicago.
He's from Chicago. So the Chicago dudes is different. And I say that with all affection. Them Chicago dudes is different, man.
That
one day we're going to look back at that 2011 season with Derek, because I think because of the injury that happened the next year.
Right.
And the fact that he wasn't able to continue to play at that MVP level, people looked at it a certain way. But man, that season was special. Absolutely special. It was crazy. Yep. But we got BJ for one more segment, because I'm going to ask BJ about his favorite topic after that. I'm going to ask BJ about today's game. Listen to the good word here on Yahoo Sports. Here for the last word, here with BJ Armstrong. BJ, there's two topics I really want to hit with you before we go. Circling around today's game. Okay. One is on the floor, one is off the floor. I'm going to start off the floor first. It was always put to me, okay, I'll say this, BJ. It was always put to me from the players who became executives and coaches. Like when I first started covering the league, those guys, the guys that you really learn from, the guys that you watch growing up, and then you become sort of like adversarial figures, right? Like BJ knows, I am a child of the Bad Boys. So I learned at the feet of Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars in completely different ways. BJ, it seemed like players of that generation built up equity that today's players are cashing in on in terms of the money that they're able to attain, in terms of, you know, the status socially, the freedom to do the things that they can do in the ways on the floor and off. Do you feel, BJ, because I'll tell you where I sit on it, but do you feel that today's players are putting into the game as much as they are taking from the game?
Well, that's a big question, Vinny, but I will say this. You know, as a former player, and I have to go back to the former player because I can never, ever forget what it means to be on that treadmill trying to run a 5-minute mile. I can't ever forget that.
Right.
It's easy for me now as an executive to say and point the fingers at the players. That's easy. That's easy for me to do. Okay. To answer your question, no. But I'm not going to do that because, Vinny, all of this goes back to a very key moment, okay, in the 80s. I came in this league in the late 80s, played the majority of my career in the 90s. So I've watched this thing, Vinny, for some time now. And I finally have gotten to a place where I feel like I have the perspective that I can comment about this. You know, I'm not saying any generation is better than the other, but I can point to key moments. One of the key moments in all of this to answer this question happened in 1994 when they changed the three-point line.
Okay? Mm.
Mm-hmm. They changed the three-point line for 3 years, Vinny.
Yep.
From 94 to 97. They changed it. They made it shorter. Okay.
They made it like a foot, almost like 22-6. It was at 23-9 or something, and they moved it to 22-6 or something
and
like here, that.
And before I give my opinion, because I'm going to give you my opinion, right, because you asked, I want to also be able to, because I know Vinny, is one thing about you is I know you respect the craft and you respect your profession, right? It's one thing to give your opinion, but it's also, I want to make sure that our listeners here, that your listeners understand that where did this start? This started in 1994 when they changed the three-point line. Now, when you look at the players, Vinny, we went from a league where all of a sudden you started having stars. Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Isaiah Thomas. Then it's this guy came in the early 90s, Michael Jordan. There was Dr. J. Then you had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Then you had Shaquille O'Neal, Patrick Ewing. The list goes on. The late Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, Hakeem Olajuwon. Okay. The game was at an all-time high as far as popularity. You could argue in the 90s, in particular, that we had the most popular athletes.
Mm-hmm.
We had the most popular game, more than football. You could argue that.
Yeah, you could.
Okay. The business was going in the right direction. We're getting, the business people were watching. There was interest. There were stars. In 1992, we took the game globally. We were influencing the game all around the world. More players now wanted to, from other countries, wanted to play in the NBA. Merchandise, arenas were being built. The business was television. Everything was going in the right direction. We could argue in America that basketball was the most popular sport at that particular time, right? Suddenly, the executives, not the players, this is why suddenly the executives made a decision. The rules committee, the NBA, owners made a decision to change the game. Now, Vinny, you can go back. We can look at what happened in 1994 was suddenly you had an influx of three-point shooting because they wanted to bring the line in to do what? Increase what?
Increase scoring. Okay. Artificially doing it.
Okay. Now, let's get to the facts here. It was never explained why. I was still playing at that time. It was never explained why. But why was it changed back? No one ever, Benny, no one ever explained why, but then suddenly it was changed back. And the reason it was changed back is because the spacing on the floor was affected by the game. Okay? Now, Benny, that's when it all changed from 94 to 97. The game changed. They changed the rules of the game. Now, a reason I'm pointing that out is because we have a definitive moment where we know the rules were changed. The players didn't change those rules. How many times have you heard this, Vinny? The players will adjust to the rules. If the game is being called,
every time.
There you go. Okay. So the players have adjusted. Now, Vinny, you can be my guest. We can go this summer. When I go watch a pickup game anywhere in the world, I don't see guys just shooting threes in the summertime. It's not a natural way to play the way we're watching the game today.
Right.
Vinny, you can go in the summer and no one is just dribbling up to shoot a three and then no, Vinny, you've been on the playgrounds of Detroit like I have. The three-point ball, it may be something you might do, but you playing
the name of the game was getting as close to the basket as possible.
There you go. There you go. Okay. So now I can sit here and it's easy for me to blame the player. But Vinny, I didn't see any of the players part of the changing of the rules.
No, it's the way that the game is taught.
Yes. So now, but then when I go speak to coaches always tell me in a very political way, defense wins championships. So when I look at the champion of last year, the Boston Celtics, Jrue Holiday and those guys, they defend.
They do. Okay? Derek White.
When the Warriors were winning, yeah, we were talking about Steph Curry shooting threes and the Splash Brothers, but no one ever said they were the best defensive team during those times.
Yeah.
Okay. So we know the formula. You look at the best team now. Okay, Shea Alexander, or they're one of the best teams.
Mm-hmm.
They
defend.
They defend. You look at the Cleveland Cavaliers.
They defend.
Okay, so what happened was we got into this narrative of offense, but all of the coaches know secretly if you want to win, you better play defense. But who is influencing the game? Because why are we still putting all this emphasis on offense when you grew up watching perhaps one of the greatest defensive teams in the history of the NBA? And the Bulls, let me assure you, we knew that. And guess what we did? We became one of the better defensive teams.
Yes, you did.
So we know the formula, whether it's Tim Duncan, Hakeem Olajuwon, the LA Lakers with Phil Jackson again for the Lakers, mm-hmm. Pat Riley. It's the same formula. However, what has happened is in 1994, somebody made a decision to tinker with the game. That's what happened. This is a fact. Now, in saying that, Vinny, we know that defense, I don't care what sport you're playing. If you're going to win, you better get a stop. Now, Vinny, how come everyone, all 30 teams, how come everyone is putting so much emphasis on the three-point shot when the coaches privately are saying to me, because they come, I talk to these coaches. Why? Because the coaches deal directly with those players. If all of the coaches know that defense wins, well, who is influencing them to shoot all the threes? Somebody's got to answer these questions. And it's not the players. Because when you talk to the players, all of them can't shoot. And they know that. But why are they shooting? Someone's encouraging them to do that. And these coaches, you can go talk to them. How do I know this? Because how do I know this is accurate? Because only in the NBA has the three-point line had this big of an effect on the game and the way the game looks. It's not in Europe. And that arguably they probably ushered in the stretch four.
Right. Right.
But, big, yeah. And I know they can shoot better than our players, but why doesn't it have the same effect on their game? College basketball. Well, I see Edie, he was effective. Klingham, still effective. I see big guys getting post moves down there. Why hasn't it had the same effect on that game that it has had on our game, unless there's someone that we can't see is influencing the game? Think about the three-point shot has only had this level of effect on the NBA game. And we know the kids who play similar to us now are the MVPs. Jokic plays more like the 90s player than he plays in the current player. Giannis for sure plays like it. And Shai Alexander for sure.
Yeah.
Joel Embiid for sure. And he shoots threes. But yeah, so all of the guys that have won the MVPs plays more similar to us, when I say us, that era, than right. The current era, but all of the emphasis is on one particular way to shoot the threes. So I'm saying all this, Vinny, to say the following. No, I'm not putting this on the players. Because when I watch the players play, minus when they're not with their teams, they play a different way. And be my guest. Vinny, you are more than welcome. Why do they play different? And then in college, it hasn't had the same effect. And in Europe, it hasn't had the same effect. The only place it's had this level of effect is in the NBA. And now, Vinny, I'm going to turn it over to you and say why.
Oh, it's very easy why, as we close this out. It's very easy why. It's because we have, quote unquote, the benefit of new information. And I think new information has become too much information, and too much information has been in the influx of the robotic style that teams are instructed to play. It's either get to the line, get to the basket, or shoot a three. That is the overuse of analytics, which takes away from creativity, which takes away from natural basketball flow, which is largely employed by people who did not play the game. And I don't mean played the game at like a high level. I mean played the game, period. Who just look at this as a numerical equation as opposed to people with brains and everything else. It's an interesting discussion. I'm going to bring BJ on again because we're going to go deeper into it. And I'm not even going to talk to BJ because BJ just talked about, you know, defense and everything else when the Chicago Bulls complained that the Pistons was a little too physical for his Chicago Bulls back in the early 90s. So we had to change the rules and bring in a flagrant foul. And then one day, me and BJ are going to talk about the Pistons walking off the floor in 1991.
Sure.
And why that really happened. One day we're going to talk about that, why that really happened. And it ain't going to be in no documentary. documentary form. We gonna, me and BJ gonna really
talk
it out.
We can talk about it.
We gonna talk about it. Because me and BJ know what really happened. But that, my friends, that, my friends, is the great BJ Armstrong. BJ, man, I really appreciate you, brother.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you, Vincent, a.k.a. Vinny.
There we go, man.
You got a great show, man. We're so proud of you, man. And keep doing your work and keep fighting a good fight, my friend.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks to BJ for joining us. Thanks to producer Joe and the entire team who works hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back on Wednesday with Titus and Ice. And until then, everybody be safe.